Hey everybody, Mike Cunningham here, host of the Gill Athletics Connections podcast. Quick little bonus episode for you here. Sammy Dabbs, great hurdler coach down in Texas, has worked on the high school, college, professional levels with success on all three levels. Recently did an Instagram live talking about the club coach and high school coach debate, if you will. And while it's very centered around Texas and his experiences, we thought that this might be good material for everybody to listen. So enjoy Sammy Dabbs.
All right. So after this weekend, being up in Lubbock at Texas Tech at the high school invitational meet, I was driving back and just kind of reflecting on the meet, and those who had not had a chance to see the results from the meet up in Lubbock at Texas Tech. It's quite impressive for it to be a non-championship meet, and with the amount of time that I've been around high school track and field for the last 10 years, it's probably one of the most impressive high school track meets, especially for indoor, that I've ever been around. And the reason it was so impressive, it wasn't just the quality of the performances, it was the depth of the performances. So, if you go in about a month, you're going to have mid-major programs across the country start to have their indoor conference meets. And so, when you start looking at the Sun Belt and Conference USA, the WAG, the Mountain West, and you start looking at these results from these conference meets, and then you go back and look at the results from Texas Tech, and you look at what the top eight, what it takes to make the final at these conference meets, and then you go back and look at Texas Tech, you're going to realize, like, whoa, you had a high school competition that had results that were very similar and along the same lines of what a collegiate meet is. Now, I've seen big-time high school meets like this before, but they were in March in New York, not in January in Texas. So that was what was so impressive. And then the depth of the meet, the fact that you had, I want to say, 50 plus girls who ran under 25 seconds indoors. The fact that I think you had somewhere along the lines, almost 30 to 40 boys who ran under 7 flat indoors in the 60 dash. I mean, these are numbers that are pretty ridiculous. I mean, to be top 16, you had to run under 770 to be top 16 for high school girls. These are really, really, like, you know, elite status type numbers. So that was what was impressive to myself. Now, albeit there definitely was, you were in Lubbock, Texas, so there was some altitude. But regardless, the competition was top notch. And so when you start talking about indoor track, the first thing you have to look at doing indoor track is, where are these kids coming from who are competing indoors? Because very few high school programs are actually taking a team or taking athletes to an indoor meet. And so who are the people who are getting these athletes to the meets? And it's their parents, it's their club coaches, it's their private coaches. These are the ones who are being very, proactive in making sure that athletes, one, they get their season started a little bit early, but they get a chance to get the experience of what college is. So as a former college coach who did it for 11 years, a person who's worked for high school athletes for 10 years now, and a person who actually owns a high school record indoors, indoor track is very important. Whether people like it or not, if you run track in college, 9 times out of 10, you are going to have to run indoor track. And if you have to run indoor track, then it's something that if you have the experience going into college, it can be a huge benefit for you. If you don't, and you're a person who has a decent amount of money, that lack of experience indoors could cost you. So having the indoor experience is a huge deal, in my opinion. And this is coming from somebody, again, who actually coached in college. So right now, we have a big debate in Texas, and it's across the country, but in Texas, it's a huge thing, and you have a fight. you have a fight between the high school programs and the club in the private sector. And myself, being a private coach who coached in college, who had full control over his kids and over his program, I definitely get a chance to see kind of a little bit from both sides. So one of the first athletes that I worked with that was a non-college athlete, and this is back when I first started coaching, was a young lady who, her high school, she had a new coach every year for 4 years. Now think about that. Every year you have a new coach. So there's no continuity, there's no relationship, there's no history, there's nothing that's going on. And so by the time she got to be a senior, her parents made the decision that it was better for her to graduate early and compete in the meets that were available versus to stay and run for her fourth high school coach at the high school. So this young lady, we made the decision that she wanted to run the hurdles. So she was an 11.9, 11.8 sprinter who wanted to learn the hurdles. Well, we ended up running a full indoor season. And because me being in the college world the way I was, I knew the meets I could get her into and compete her unattached, small low-key meets. Well, she ended up running 14.1 by the end of that year and getting a full scholarship to a school that was in the Sun Belt Conference at the time. So it worked out for her. But she had a brand new event, which was the hurdles. Well, she was working with a person who was coaching the hurdles in college. Now, would we have gotten the same outcome had we done that same thing and she stayed at that high school? We have no idea. But the high school coach probably would not have been as open to her doing only the hurdle stuff with myself because she was just learning the event versus sharing her with a coach at the school. So that was the decision we made. It paid off for her. She got a full scholarship to college. And, you know, we were good. So that was my first kind of encounter. This was right around 2007 that I had this encounter. And so it allowed me to look at some things on a different basis. So a situation like that, what do you tell a parent who their local high school has had a different coach every year? All right. Different philosophies. You don't know, the coach may or may not care as much. If you're a parent and you're in a situation like that, I have to get my kids some outside help. I have to. I mean, what other choice do I have? Because every year the coach, they've been changing coaches at this school. So parents are put in situations where they have to make some decisions at times. So starting to get into my notes. Let's see. Some of the main issues that from the private sector and club coaches that they may have with the high school programs, okay? So I hear this a lot. The track coach at school is a football coach or a basketball coach or has another coach as their number one sport, and track is their number two sport. So they don't feel like the coach invests every opportunity into being the best track coach that he can be and just looks at the program as, well, this is just my number two. Coaches who do not pursue any additional type of coaching education, who literally do not try to get better. They just take what they got and they just go with it year after year. Older coaches who have been around for a significant amount of time, who unfortunately are still coaching the exact same way that they did when they first started. And you have now a huge transition when you talk about technology and even just the way that the athletes and the kids are today. And you're still trying to do things the way you did so much longer ago. It's like, no. And the other big issue I hear coming up from the club and the private sector is a lack of proper off-season programming. For me, the fact that a lot of programs have off season, but you have coaches who've never had to go through an off season program, that was one of the main reasons I actually started doing my clinics. And the reason I did clinics is because all I was hearing programs doing in off season were bleachers, miles, and weight room. And that was it. And I'm like, there's so much more that could be done in the off season outside of running bleachers, running miles, and running repeat 400s. Like, there's so much more that can be done. So that was, that's some of the issues that I've heard from the club and private sector that people have with the high school coaches. High school coach ran D1 in college. I'll be honest. I used to think that that was a prerequisite, but to be honest, after now 21 years of coaching, I have a lot of my former athletes who are now current college high school coaches, and a lot of them do not remember half of what they did in college, in high school. I mean, in college, from a coaching standpoint, from an athlete standpoint. They don't remember the day-to-day things that they did, and they have some structure in their head, but when they really get down to it, they just like, I don't know where to start. They don't remember the X's and the O's and the specifics of from a coaching standpoint. So that was one of those things. One of the problems I hear now, because I do clinics and because I support a lot of high school coaches, and I mean, I'm a big supporter of the high school coach, because a lot of times they can be put in the wrong situation and be labeled just like club and private coaches can be labeled. A lot of the issues that a lot of the high school coaches have with club and private people is, number one, not acknowledging that the high school coach or the season actually exists. And that's a big one for me. To not acknowledge the high school coach, to not acknowledge that they have a season, that your season is more important than theirs and supersedes. No, it does not work that way. Undermining the high school program. That's another big one. Coaches who literally say, well, they don't know what they're doing at school. They're not going to do X, Y, and Z. So, or on the other side, that's all you did. You need to do some more. So here's what we're going to do. And I've seen kids leave a tough day at the high school practice and then turn around and have an even tougher day at the next practice. And you keep putting those days on top of each other, that kid is going to break at some point, or they're going to be overtrained. Another one I call it being a foe and not a friend. Going to the meets, being in the stands, causing problems, coaching kids from the stands, those things are very unnecessary. Yet we see it happen over and over and over again. You know, when people ask me, they say, well, what about you, Dad? I say, I hadn't been to a high school meet since 2016. The only meets you're going to see me at are these indoor meets where I actually get a chance to go coach the kids at these indoor meets. And then throughout the high school season, hey, I'm going to stay in my lane and I'm going to stay away. I don't ever want a coach looking over their shoulder thinking that I'm doing something from the stands or I'm undermining them in some type of way. I'm not going to do that because I wouldn't want it done to me. And so I stay as far away as I can in that regard. So those are some of the basic issues you hear from both sides. And you're going to hear me talk about things from both sides and both perspectives, because a lot of times you have the people in the private and the club sector who never look at it from the high school section perspective, and vice versa. You have sometimes private and you have high school coaches who never look at things from from the private perspective. So let's look at a good example. If I'm a kid, let's say I started running the summer track when I was 8, and I've been running with the same program forever. From the time I was 8 till I was 14, I've developed a relationship with a coach in a program. Then I get to high school, and now I have a new coach. Well, it's going to be very hard for that person walking in on day one just to have total buy-in and everything when the person that they've been with for the last, let's say, 6 years, all of their success has come from working with this particular individual. Now, that young person is being asked to kind of share. And now they have to look at this other person. Now, the thing is, where the club coach in that situation can be a huge advocate is speak positive things towards and say, hey, I need you to trust this coach. I need you to do X, Y, and Z. And that would help the situation, but that does not always happen. But from the high school coach perspective, I think it's better for the high school coach to even understand, hey, this person doesn't know me. They've had some success, but they've had some success with this other individual. Now I'm asking them to have a total buy-in to me, and they don't really know me. So I have to do something to try to earn this young person's respect. And a lot of people who are older do not want to take the time to say, I need to earn a kid's respect. They say that day one, the kid walks in the door, they need 100% buy-in, listen to me. And it's like, that is not how it works. Like, you're going to be fighting more than anything else. So that's a big thing. That's a huge thing. So that's something that I've seen. That's a scenario I think a lot of times programs don't look at. All right. Let's talk about indoor track. All right. We talked about this Texas Tech meet just recently, what took place. Indoor track in states that don't sponsor indoor track is usually where you get some of the biggest fights. So a state like Texas, where we do not sponsor indoor track, yet we have indoor track meets because we have indoor track facilities. If you think about it, we do have some high school programs that actually do take their teams to an indoor track meet. But 98% of the people competing in the competition, they're being taken to the meet and running for either their club program, they're running unattached, or some situation like that, but they're not, it's not being sponsored by the school. All right. So the indoor facilities, or the people who have these facilities, know for a fact that they have an opportunity to make some money, and that opportunity to make money by holding a track meet is not directed at the high schools per se. It's directed at the club and the private sector. That's a direct correlation where it's going to, all right? And if you think about it, the college programs have a better relationship with the club and the private coaches. So they're directing, in their eyes, right into where they're, the main source of where their athlete and their talent is coming from, which is the club and the private sector. Now, these same kids do run on high school teams. And traditional high school teams, yeah, they do not change coaches very often. But you have a lot of non-traditional teams in a lot of areas where you got coaches who change, and we just talked about this. Every 2 to 3 years, they may have a new coach. So the thing that's consistent, if as a former college coach, I knew there were certain areas of Houston that when I went to Houston or I went to certain areas of Dallas, I may not know the high school coach at that high school, but I do know the club that's in that area. All right. And so if I got to make a relationship, it was going to be more beneficial to me as a college coach to build a relationship with the club that was in that area, not necessarily the high school coach that was in that area, because high school coaches come and go. Club stay. Track Houston, Wings, the North Texas Cheetahs, the Hallmark Track Club. These are programs that have been around in certain parts of the in Texas and Dallas and Houston forever. So again, if I am a college coach, I am better served having a relationship with the club program than I am the high school program. Now, this is not saying that I will not communicate with a high school coach, or I did not communicate. I had great relationships with high school coaches. But as I just said again, a lot of them move around. The club stayed pretty consistent. So that's one thing. So indoor track in a state like Texas, where we do not sponsor indoor track, all right, and we have these indoor opportunities, it is the club and the private coaches who are the ones who are providing these opportunities for these athletes to compete. All right. Second of all, for me, one of the main reasons I have a program, I tell kids coming into it and I tell the parents, my program is a college prep program. All right. So being a college prep program, I'm going to expose the athletes to not only training, but also the experience of what it's like to be in a college setting based on how we do things, how we interact, how we go to competitions, how I coach you at the competitions, how we do things throughout that entire time. So going to 2 to 3 indoor meets a year, and for the elite ones, like I have in the past, to allow them to travel and go compete against high-level competition, that's what a collegiate season looks like during the indoor season. So these indoor meets really give us a chance to kind of get a chance to get exposed to that. Absolutely, bro. All right. So we in Texas, with this indoor season that we have, or these 2 to 3 meets that we have, I can't tell you how many times I've heard athletes tell me, well, my high school coach has told me I don't need to participate indoors. And it's like, I understand to an extent why, but then at the same time, I don't. Because, like, why would you take an opportunity away for an athlete? And when we start talking about taking opportunities away for an athlete, if you're in Texas where we have double relay points, there are a lot of kids who do not get the individual opportunity to compete. And so when you got kids who don't get the individual opportunity to compete, sometimes the only time that they actually get an opportunity to run their individual races are these indoor meets. So if it's not for the club or the private coach that is doing what they can to make sure these kids get to these meets, these opportunities do not present themselves. Okay. These indoor meets, very important. All right. If you don't think the indoor meets are important, let's go back this weekend. All right. On Friday at Texas Tech, they had a collegiate meet. They had about 8 schools. All right. Let's look at the 8 schools. LSU, Kentucky, Miami, UCF, Clemson, Oklahoma State, TCU, the whole school, Texas Tech, you had UNT, you had TSU. So you had about 10 schools in attendance at this track meet. When the meet was over with, and they had about an hour and a half break before the actual high school competition started, there were at least 7 to 8 representatives of that track meet who stayed behind to recruit that night. All right. So that right there tells you just how important the indoor track meet is by itself. All right. The previous week we were in Arkansas and you had a lot of those similar schools that were at the same competition. When the meet was over with on Friday night, when we came back into the venue on Saturday, at least 80% of those schools who ran on Friday night left coaches back to recruit at the high school meet on Saturday. All right. That's why it's important. Okay. A young lady that I work with in my program. All right. That's another program. Texas State. Texas State was at the meet. And I was talking with the coach from Texas State. And he asked, hey, coach, who do you have in your program that looks pretty good? And I said, well, this one young lady, she did this. And he said, okay. He said, now, what do you think? I said, no. I said, I think she has what it takes. And then I went to go speak to the young lady. And I said, hey, I was just talking to the coach at Texas State about you. First thing out of her mouth, coach, I was accepted to Texas State. And I got academic money. I said, give me 2 minutes. I ran back over, found the Texas State coach. Coach, she's been accepted there, and she got me up, and she has academic money. He was literally in the middle of watching a race. I said, coach, watch the race. I'm going to make sure I go grab her and y'all 2 meet up. And as soon as he finished watching the race, brought her over there, they shook hands, they spoke it out. And then it's like, hey, you're finished competing, let's go meet mom. They had a chance to go meet mom. Instantly, right then, that was a connection that was made, okay? Just that quick, being in the right place at the right time, okay? Me, as a former college coach, I can't tell you how often I would go to the A&M meet and tell my head coach, hey, the A&M meet is Friday and Saturday. I'm not coming back till Monday. And he said, why? I said, because I'm going to have home visits set up on Sunday. He said, with who? I said, it's my job to figure it out at the meet. And I would go to the meet on Friday, Saturday, make connections, and literally be in kids' homes on Sunday doing 2 and 3 and 4 home visits, driving around the city of Houston, and then turn around and come back to Denton the following Monday. And I did this consistently when I was a college coach. I would go to meets and tell my coach, hey, I'm going to stay over another day. And they would be like, well, who are you recruiting? I say, I'm going to figure it out. And I would go to the meet and I would hustle and I would figure it out. And when I'm at these meets, I see the exact same thing going on now. So that's how it works. And unfortunately, you have a lot of high school coaches who did not run track in college, who they have played other sports. And so they really have not even, they haven't seen an indoor track. They haven't been to an indoor. They don't know why it's important. The thing that they see is, this is an interruption to the beginning of my training year. And I don't even have time to get into that part. But yeah, the indoor track season is very important. I've seen kids run races and have life-changing events off of 2 races at an indoor competition. So I remember one time at UNT, I had a home visit. No, I had an official visit. And at the end of November, early December, I brought in 4 kids. 3 of those kids went to the opening meet of the season, opened up with U.S. top 25 marks, and I did not sign none of them. All right. But because they opened up with top 5 marks, and because they opened up with top 5 marks, the schools that they really wanted to go to, they got a chance to go to. So the coaches who don't understand the importance of indoors, like, no, indoor is huge. Now, this Texas Tech meet, somebody asked me, why was this meet so hot? And I said, well, I had to sit back and think about it. I said, the reason the Texas Tech meet is so hot every year is you have to look at the timing of it. You have about 2 to 3 meets prior to Texas Tech, whether it's in December, first couple of weeks of January, all right? So because a lot of times these indoor facilities aren't allowing kids to get on and have practice like we do when we were in college coaches or like we do at the pro level, the kids have to learn how to run on the track, on the job. Once they've gotten 2 to 3 reps of racing on the facilities, and they've gotten a chance to kind of figure their warm-up routine out, by the time they show up to Texas Tech, they've run 2 to 3 meets, gotten anywhere from 4 to 6 races under their belt. So they finally start to have some rhythm. They finally got some experience. They finally have some confidence on how to execute their race plan. All right. Then you have the best athletes from the Dallas area, from the Houston area, and then you're going to get a splash of athletes coming from other parts of the United States. So because of social media, these kids know that the other top kids in the country and in the state are coming to this one location. So the expectation, the excitement, it's already building before they even get there. The coaches are excited. The kids are excited. You put all of them in the building and there's just this energy in the building. You have wall-to-wall fans all over the place. And on top of this, Texas Tech has a beautiful facility, a very fast surface. And in addition to all of that, you also have the fact that it's altitude. So when you throw all of these things together, Texas Tech is set up to be just like it's a big deal. And so what we get is a microcosm of April and May, which we normally see in April and May in Texas. We actually get that in January. And so that's the only time these top level kids get a chance to put it together for that. All right. And this is one of the reasons why the numbers at Texas Tech are always so freaking just nuts the way they are. So yeah, Texas Tech was great, but if you go look at the numbers down in Houston, the numbers in Houston were not bad at all. And so, like I say, when you get the experience under their belt and you put them all together at Texas Tech, we get a chance to, like I say, you get this April, May vibe in January. A lot of these kids, unfortunately, won't get a chance to compete in as many open races come March and April and May as they will right now during the indoor season. So they're taking advantage of these opportunities. All right. A lot of them may not get the same level of coaching because a lot of them may have to return back to their high school programs and have to deal with a coach who may not be as knowledgeable. And again, I'm not dogging a high school coach. All right. I'm going to go back over some of that other stuff I spoke about earlier. So some of them are getting some of the better coaching from an individual standpoint is what I'm talking about. And so now when I got to go back and deal with my high school program, there are times where my high school program may not be as knowledgeable about the technical aspects of what it takes for me to be better in certain races. Okay. So when you get back and I'm leaving indoor season and now I have to return back to full time with my high school program. All right. What are the big issues that I have to deal with if I'm a high school athlete or if I'm a high school coach? Well, one of the biggest things as a high school coach that you got to deal with is the fact that there is a ratio anywhere from 15, 20, 25 to 1. And I'm one coach. So me getting a chance to interact and talk with a lot of high school coaches, some of the things that I found out is a lot of them they're understaffed. Okay. And even if they aren't understaffed, the coaches who they are given as assistant coaches aren't knowledgeable in the sport of track and field. So you may have one knowledgeable coach and a staff of 4 to 5 people, but only one of them is a serious track person. The other four are just trying to do the best that they can do. And I've heard some horror stories from people who are real legit track people on high school staffs who actually give a damn about kids and say, I don't have any help on my team. And now you have one coach trying to do so much stuff. And if I'm in a situation like that, am I mad that a kid is still doing some stuff with their outside coach? I almost need it in certain situations. And it's not a knock. The thing is, this is where the communication has to come into play. If I know I got an athlete that's doing some stuff outside, whether it's the high school coach, the private coach, the club coach, the parents, at some point, some people have to come together and say, hey, let's sit down and let's do what's in the best interest of the athlete. All right. I tell everybody, 10 years of doing this, I've had some phenomenal high school athletes. All right. What has made those athletes so phenomenal was the fact that myself and those high school coaches actually worked together. It was huge. When I go back and think about how we worked together at Arlington Seguin with Tonia Marshall, okay? And I tell people, I need you to look at the Tonia Marshall situation like this. If I was a selfish person who was just looking at trying to do things that were only going to benefit myself, I would have pulled her from her high school program. Okay? Tonia's junior year, she was second in long jump at state. She won the 100 hurdles. The 4x1 was second. She was on that relay. The 4x2 was first. 4 events, and she was a participant in every point that was scored on the team, and they won a state title. Okay? The next year, that same foursome came back to get second at state. So 2 trophies, 4 girls. She's gone on to go to college and be a professional athlete. One other young lady on that team participated in track and field in college. The other two graduated in school doing whatever. 20 years from now, if they all come back to their high school reunion, they're always going to look at and point and say, state champion. That's the highlight from an athletic career for the other 3 girls. Tonia's going on to be an SEC champion. She's going on to be an NCAA champion. She's going to run in Olympic trials, potentially make them. She has track for the future. So it was only a bump on her career path. But those other girls, it was the highlight. So me, as a private coach, if I would have been selfish, look what I would have took away from those athletes, from those parents, and not only from the parents, from the coaches and from that school. So it's not about me. It's about what's in the best interest. Okay. And this is where coaches have to be able to put their egos to the side. I think about Samantha Gonzalez, all right, working with her high school coach, keeping her in the loop of what we were doing on a daily basis and stuff like that. I think about working with Danielle White, and not only working with Danielle White at that time, working with the entire team at Cedar Hill at that time and working with Coach Jones and how it benefited those girls. So Coach Jones trusted me enough with Danielle so that when we went to indoors, Danielle ran 23.90 in the prelims, and she did not run the finals. We went to Arkansas, she ran 23.7 in the prelims, and she did not run the finals. And I had people fussing at me, and I said, well, the kid is not fit enough to run the finals. She's only fit enough to get through a fast race. Now, people who say, well, you know, these kids are running fast right now. Well, let's fast forward to April at the regional meet and district meet, where Danielle ran 23.2 at district and then 23.2 at regionals. When she ran 23.2 at regionals, it was race number 6 over the course of 2 days. All right. She went to state and ended up, I mean, she burnt it up in the 4x1 and the 4x2, ended up getting third in the 200 because she literally shot her load on the relays. So by the time it came to her individual event, she didn't have anything left, and she still managed to run 23.7. So I have plenty of examples of how it can work, but it comes down to the adults having a conversation. All right. Now, one of the biggest issues that come in these situations are parents, because you have parents who will play coaches against each other. And that's why it's so important that the coaches have dialogue and communicate and talk to each other. Because I've seen a lot of situations where you have parents who will not collaborate the way it's supposed to be done. Yes, you're right, Ro. We talk about that professional courtesy. So I try to tell my athletes, and I tell the parents, look, I am an open door. If a coach wants to reach out and communicate with me, they can. I typically, for me, I let coaches know that I'm available to talk to, but out of respect, I don't want to just come directly at them because I don't know them that well. But if between parents and stuff like that, we usually can communicate. Now that I have a platform on social media, a lot of them have been able to reach out to me through social media and see, okay, this guy is not such a bad guy. And so if I'm a club or a private coach, I have to make myself available to be able to talk to people. So at the end of the day, it's supposed to be about what's in the best interest of the athlete. Now, a big topic of conversation, and this is probably the biggest one we have right now, is right where we are right now. Indoor season's about to be over. High school season's about to start. Should I keep working with an athlete if I'm the outside coach? And I say that is dependent on every different situation. I've had some kids who their coaches did the bare minimum. And it was very disheartening seeing that their coaches did the bare minimum to the point to where it almost was more work because you were having to make up because they weren't getting anything. All right. Then I've had coaches who do too much. And in those situations like that, I have to tell the parents, usually. It's not the kid. I have to tell the parents, hey, look, that's too much going on at school. I can't do anything for your athlete on the outside. So if I try to do anything, they're going to be hurt. So I'm going to back off. And I've had parents get upset at me because I backed off. And then you have some situations where kids just aren't getting everything that they can, or the coaches just don't have the knowledge to do everything that needs to be done. And in those situations, I just tell the parents and the kids, all I need you to do is communicate with me with what you're doing and what you're not doing. because based on that, I'm going to be the person to fill in the gaps. And I would probably say 75% of the kids that I work with actually fall into that fill in the gap space. All right. And when I say fall in that fill in the gap, we're talking about things like this. I've seen kids who, and they say, I say, hey, y'all did blocks today. They're like, yeah. I say, what is the progression of learning the blocks been about? They said, what progression? We put the blocks out and we just go. Well, that's a red flag to me, because as a college coach, it took me 10 weeks of acceleration and technical work to move a kid from a standing start all the way down to getting into the blocks with both hands. That was a college kid. So if I got a high school kid who didn't have nowhere near the same amount of experience, who didn't have the same amount of coordination, who is not as strong, it's going to take some time to get that young man or that young woman to the point where they can actually push out of the blocks. Great example. I had a young man last year who quit basketball and started running track, and his parents brought him to me because they found out I did some stuff with some kids from their school. And so I remember how he looked at the blocks. And it took me, I started working with him in late March, and it probably took me to the summertime to get him to be able to execute a proper block start. But he had never run track before. He only played basketball. So, but unfortunately at school, he has to start races from the blocks. So what he was doing was horrible. But what choice did he have? He had never done it before. So the teaching elements. So I have kids who, you know, we do our off-season program. We're teaching proper blocks, acceleration patterns, and things like that. I get kids who come to my program, and let's say they run the 400. And I say, okay, what's your race model? And it's like, what race model? What's that? And it's like, okay. Sometimes their entire workout might be two reps. And it might be running 180, 200 meters. And they're like, that was it. Well, the whole goal of the workout was to teach them how to run different parts of the 400. And each week, we work on different parts of the race. We're not out here doing endurance work or anything like that. We're doing things where I'm putting cones out, teaching them, okay, now when you get to this part of the backstretch, you got to go in what's called a float phase, and you got to try to maintain rhythm in X, Y, and Z. If it's a 300 hurdler, where at school they did a bunch of 300 hurdle conditioning, but they didn't really work on what leg was coming up, now it's me coming back and saying, okay, this is going to be your race model for the 300 hurdles. And now I'm trying to go down and say, all right, we're going to be this leg right here. We're going to do this and X, Y, and Z. And that's what we're trying to do. If it's the 100 hurdles, I said this at my clinic when I spoke a few weeks ago. Most of the kids, I asked them, I said, how many hurdles do y'all go over at practice? And they say no more than 5 or 6. And I'm like, it's a 10 hurdle race. Most coaches want to do over distance on everything, but then when we get to our hurdle race that has 10 hurdles, we don't want to run at least the minimum number of hurdles in the race on a straightaway. Like, that makes no sense. So a kid may come to me and say, hey, you got 2 reps today. We got 2 times 12, full recovery. What's full recovery? 15, probably 20 minutes between reps, but that's all they got. That's the supplemental stuff that's going on in my program. Now, I don't know how everybody else's is, but if you are outside coach and you're not supplementing what may not be taking place at school, you might need to rethink how you're doing that. And then at the same time, I may say, hey, coach, if because of time and resources, you only got time to do this, if you do this, I'll do this. And let's work it together. Okay? One of the biggest fights you see is usually in the field events and hurdle events. And it's not so much fights. A kid who pole vaults, I usually don't see a lot of gripes when they go to the pole vault coach, who's most likely an outside coach. Very few high school coaches have an actual, real, legit pole vault coach. The throwing events, you may have a football coach who, like, literally, they don't know nothing about the throwing events. They're picking up an implement. They're looking at something they found on YouTube, which I can appreciate at least them doing that. But, okay, let's go get a specialized person who can work with these events. The hurdles, which is what I do. So many hurdles coming to me. And it's like, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. Okay. And, you know, that's those areas. It seems like I've had some of the most resistance. I've had kids who do not have a hurdle coach, yet they've been told that they can't work with me outside. And I'm like, what sense does that make? Like, that makes no sense to me at all. You can't give them the resources that they need, yet you're upset when they go find it. And I think someone made the note here earlier, and that's a great example. If I was a student in school and I needed help, and I needed to go get a tutor, nobody would get upset at me getting a tutor working with me outside. Are you saying that the teacher is lacking? No. How many kids are in class? How long is class time? It may not be enough time for the teacher to be able to get that individual attention, or it may be too many kids for the teacher to address all the issues with everybody. So by me getting a tutor for my kid on the outside, that's what we did. And this can be looked at the same thing from an athletic standpoint. So when you look at the fall and the off-season program, coaches who don't have a legit fall and off-season program, it's like, hey, if you don't, and these kids are doing what they got to do to be able to run indoors. I mean, I still have kids today who their initial track practices don't start till late January until February. And it's like, anybody who does that, it's like, let's think about this. The football team has spring football. They have summer workouts. They start practice at least a month before the first game. They have two scrimmages. They have all these things that take place before the first actual game. And you're going to start practice 2 to 3 weeks before a track meet. And so you're telling me that in 3 weeks of training, the person who's supposed to run the 400 or the 4x4 or the 800 or whatever it is going to be ready to participate in those events. It's like, no, let's get real. Come on. Like, you're already telling me you're just here to do the basic minimum. And so if you're here to do the basic minimum, I'm sorry. You cannot get upset that that family has made the decision to say, I got to find somebody else that can work with my kid. No, and I understand that there are hour limits and stuff like that. And this is where the collaborations and stuff come into play. The coaches who actually give a damn, like, typically, they're trying to do everything they can to exhaust all their everything they can to help kids get better. Most of the time, the fight is with the coaches who aren't there. Now, if I know for a fact, there are some coaches at the high school level who do an awesome job. And if I have a kid that's in their program, it's like, look, I don't have to do anything extra with you. That coach is efficient with their time. They know about setup. They know about training cycles. They know about, they know what they're doing, okay? And if I know I have a kid that's in a program like that with a coach that's knowledgeable that way, hey, I'm good, all right? When the kid's over with, I'll see them later on, okay? I don't need that. But unfortunately, I would probably say 75 to 80% of my kids I deal with are not in situations like that. And that's the reason why somebody on the outside is necessary. Now, when you look at the other sports, when you look at soccer, when you look at softball, when you look at, basketball, when you look at a lot of these other sports, okay, they have seasons that almost mirror the collegiate seasons. Okay. I've heard in the case of volleyball, where volleyball teams won't allow an athlete to be on varsity if they're not playing club. Like, and a track coach would be like, wow, that's pretty crazy. But because these regular high school seasons mirror the collegiate seasons, a lot of times the exposure that the kids get in those other sports is with their club and their private teams. And it's almost encouraged. Track and field is the one that seems to be almost, and I'm not going to say it's discouraged, but when you look at a timetable, If I'm a program that didn't start actual training until January, and I was with my kid, I had my kid January to February, that's 1 month. February to March, 2 months. March to April, 3 months. All right. April is usually around district, regionals, and let's say I didn't make a mistake. So let's say I had my athlete 3.5 months. Now that athlete went into summer track, and all of May, June, July, they were in summer track. That's 3 months. Took August off, September, October, November, December. 9 months of the year, they actually were with their club or their private coach. 3.5 months, they were with you. That's why when I posted this past weekend about looking at the results from Texas Tech, I'm not trying to call a coach out or anything like that. All I'm saying is if you're a coach and you're not that knowledgeable about sprints and hurdles, and you pull up the results of that meet and you look and you realize that over 50 girls in the country and over 50 girls around the state of Texas have run under 25 seconds indoors, over 40 guys have run 22 and faster already. We have almost 40 guys who run under 7 flat in the 60. You have the number of girls who ran 7, who ran under 780. All right. 780 is usually when you start getting under 780 and getting into the 770s. Now you're looking at it right at 12 flat, 11.9. So you have that many young ladies who are ready to run right at 12 flat or faster. If you don't have the knowledge, if you don't have the wherewithal, the background to understand how to coach an athlete to improve and be ready to compete against individuals who are running this way, and your solution is just, hey, I'm just going to stick these kids on relays, you're probably going to be one of the coaches who start getting left out, or find somebody who can work with you to help you get better. And a lot of times the frustration that high school coaches see from the outside is because if a person feels like, hey, I may not know everything, but I'm doing everything I can to help. And if they feel like you're not doing the same thing, that's where they have a problem. So that's kind of what my big thing is these days, watching, observing, seeing what I saw at that meet. It was quite telling. For someone who was a hurdle guy, the fact that it was so many hurdlers that we could not even get block starts in because the line was so long. And then to go out there and see how the kids performed on the track, it was pretty crazy. So it literally was one of the most impressive meets I've seen. And I really challenge everybody, in a month, when they start running conference championship meets, go back and look at the results from Texas Tech. Go back and look at what the 8th place mark was. And then when you do that, go and look at these mid-major conference meets, and you really will realize you wasn't just watching a normal high school competition. This was along the lines of an NCAA style track and field meet. All right. What up, Will? So that's something that, I mean, you got to pay attention to. And if I'm not mistaken, a lot of these kids are young. I mean, the young lady, I mean, I saw the video on Twitter about the young lady who ran the 200 by herself. And I said, that's probably one of the most impressive things I've seen. 24-2 indoors is one thing, to do it in the rounds. To come back in a final by yourself in lane 6, run 24-2 again with the crowd just going crazy for you, that's freaking nuts. And to find out the young lady's just a sophomore, that's, if I'm a college coach, I'm trying to get her to commit today. I want her on my team. All right. Because her mindset in order to go out and do something like that is something that you can't coach. Okay. That's impressive. Very impressive. So, you know, the high school club private debate is not going away. It's not going away no time soon. We all have to figure out a way to be able to work together because, again, it is about what's in the best interest of the kids. And that's one thing I have done everything in my power, especially when I've had these elite kids on high school teams, is to make sure that I was able to do something to not only benefit that athlete, but also benefit that team. Like, don't just go there and just be selfish and help just that one person. Help the team out because it's needed.